Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th day of January, Anno Domini 2020. And you, unlike what I wrote in the forums, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Still making that 19 error?
This is the first time I've made it. I've written half a dozen checks. I've done other things.
You have to do it a couple of times to get out of your system.
Exactly. And like they say, they always advise now to do 2020 on a check.
Right.
I don't know if anybody would. It's not like you can alter the amount. It's.
Right.
Well, but yeah, like the example they always give is if you make an employment contract for someone. You know, and starting in January 1st, 20, I'll pay you $50 a week.
Right.
And someone changes that to 2015.
Right.
And then sues you for back pay because they have it in writing.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, that's true.
Before we start, let me just say to everyone, Happy Lunar New Year. It is the year of the rat and the start of the spring festival, so we're all pretty excited, although you wouldn't know it was a spring festival if you looked outdoors.
Gong hei fat choy.
Gong hei fat choy.
Well, at least it's not snowing.
Exactly.
You don't have to shovel this stuff.
Ain't that the truth? Well, let's shovel some other stuff as we go along through our day.
You must be talking about Microsoft then.
No, actually, I'm talking about Frontier. Oh. Frontier Communications is planning to file for bankruptcy within 2 months. They're asking creditors to help craft a turnaround deal that includes filing for bankruptcy by the middle of March, the Ides of March. Frontier CEO Bernie Han and other company executives met with creditors and advisors last Thursday and told them the company wants to negotiate a prepackaged agreement before $365 million of debt payments come due on March 15th. $356 million. Yeah, the move would likely involve Chapter 11 bankruptcy to let Frontier keep operating without interruption of telephone and broadband service to its customers. Frontier offers residential and business services in 29 states over its fiber and copper networks. Frontier has been losing customers and reducing its staff. Frontier cut over 2,000 employees in the last year. Frontier's financial performance last year was so bad that it refused to take any questions from investors during its quarterly earnings call in August. Man, that is a no-no. Frontier is in the process of selling its operations in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana to Wave Division Capital. Frontier's decline is partly due to the decreasing relevance of its copper networks, to put it politely, and its failure to properly maintain those old phone lines, to put it even more politely. But Frontier has also provided poor customer service on its modern fiber networks. I have a number of friends who work or worked at Frontier, and the stories they tell make it sound like a horror show. I'm sure they're exaggerating, but anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Frontier files for bankruptcy. And you get to that poll, by the way, by going to Soundbites and see the big red, the poll is back. Underneath it, the big green, take it here. Click on that and it will take you to the poll. And your choices are, and it's Frontier files for bankruptcy, and your choices are, oh no, my landline. Oh no, my email address. Oh no, both. Meh. Not using their services. And of course, other. And if you choose other, you can leave a comment in the forums. And you get to the forums by scrolling down on the right under fascinating stuff. And then you select the forums, the second forum down. Is the poll discussion, and currently at least the first thing under the poll discussion is incorrectly 25 January 19, Frontier files for bankruptcy. excuse me, I beg your pardon. I'm all choked up. And we've had two posts so far, and we'd love to hear what you have to say there. And also, of course, you can give us a call, probably, on your cell phone at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I mean, how many folks really use, you know, home phones anymore?
Very few.
And Phil...
Phil Dampier?
Dampier, thank you. In Stop the Cap has been posting this for years that they're expecting Frontier to declare bankruptcy.
Well, they're
One of the things the Frontier's been doing that no one could understand is they're buying landline services all around the country. When landlines are on a sharp decline, why would you buy something that's on its way out?
They're more or less doing like Kodak has, you know, not keeping up with the times, and now it's going to be their demise.
Yep. And trying to tell you how great DSL is.
Well, part of the issue is that the people who are running the company are, and I can say this because I am too, old.
Yeah.
And they come from an era that's all copper, and they understand copper, and they've always made metric bucket loads of cash from copper.
Yep.
And they just don't get that nobody cares about copper anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, we are fortunate here in this area to have a fiber provider, an independent fiber provider in Greenlight, and we will have Mark Murphy here next week to talk about Greenlight. Now, when we have Mark Murphy here, I'm telling you people this now, no whiners.
Right.
I don't want people coming and saying, you're not in my house yet. Why are you in Buffalo? Look. We'll talk about things, but we don't want whiners.
I will not put anybody...
We'll hang them up.
Yeah, I'll dump them.
We'll dump them.
I can dump them if they start getting into...
Don't I have it yet?
A beef itch.
When are you coming here? Yeah. Most of that's on their website.
Yeah, they can look at it. I mean, the other thing is that, folks, and I had to do it in my neighborhood. Me and a few others in the neighborhood got together and we went around because Mark will provide these stickers. Door hangers that you can go out and get the word out to get folks up. Consequently, you know, we did it. We did a good job that all of a sudden, bam, they brought it back. They brought it in. And now they're, I've had it now for, over a month, loving it. I'm not going to deny it. I'm no longer jealous of Nick. I had to keep giving him an Italian gesture.
You speak Root Italian Street very well.
Yeah. And, it's been great. So, folks, you just got to get off and,
All right, but that's for next week.
Yep.
Yeah, we can talk about the technology and fiber and what it takes to come into an area.
See, yes.
Part of the problem and the reason they're so slow to expand is that they have to run new wire, basically, glass wire. and it's a pain
permissions
and everything.
Right,
yeah.
They have to get all the permissions. We'll talk about all that next week. Right now, we're talking about Frontier and whatever you want to talk about, just like Carl did from Pottstown, PA. Thanks for being patient, Carl. What's up?
Well, how you doing, guys?
We're good. How are you?
Pretty good today. It's rainy here.
Oh, yeah, here too.
I have a question about location. I'm located in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, as you know.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, a remote computer will determine my location as being in Elk Ridge, Maryland. I supplement my income by driving for Uber. And so far, six times in the last month, the Uber computers have sent me an email telling me that I have been logged in from a new location located in Elk Ridge, Maryland. Is that really me? And, of course, it was me, but I wasn't in Elk Ridge, Maryland. I've never been there in my life. I also received an email from another website called OfferUp, which is like a Craigslist-type website for local things.
Sure.
You've logged in from a new location, Elk Ridge, Maryland. So why are these computers telling me I'm logging in from Elk Ridge, Maryland, but I'm not? And just one more thing, because maybe this has something to do with it. I'm accessing the Internet through a Sprint cell phone Wi-Fi hotspot. So that may have started when I started to access the internet in that way.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Probably did. Here's the thing. The way that most places tell you or know where you're coming from is by doing a reverse lookup on your IP address. And that's great, but what they're really looking up is your internet service provider's location. Now, the root connection you're making to the internet. So mostly that's local, but because the internet is the internet, sometimes that can be anywhere in the nation.
And especially with cell phone service, your cellular network is being connected to the internet somewhere. And apparently for your connection to Sprint, that's in Elk Ridge, Maryland.
At least sometimes.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. I'll tell you what, when you vote in the poll, I track what city you're coming from, just for my own gee whiz. And I don't know who you are. I don't even know how many people from each city do it. But I can tell what city you're from. But I know that what I'm really knowing is what city that person's internet service provider connects to the backbones of the internet. And that's really as close as I can get to your actual location. So, for example, somebody voted in the poll from Chicago, Illinois. Are they really in Chicago, or is that just where their internet service provider is? I don't know.
And even when it's local, it may not be that local.
Right.
We often get at our store in Victor, it will say Canandaigua is your location, because that's apparently where the internet head end is for our store.
Right.
Even though we're 30 miles from Canandaigua.
Right. Right.
But I guess in the scheme of things, 30 miles isn't that far.
Right. And mostly that's used nationally. So, for example, if you try, there are some services from, for example, the BBC that are free to anyone in Great Britain because they pay a tax that makes it possible to have that. And so it's free to everybody in Great Britain. But if I try to log into it from the United States, I get an "I'm sorry, you're outside the country." And they don't really care where I am. I'm just not in England. So for internet, for that broad, or I suppose gross, a generalization, it's fine. But in terms of getting to your individual address, unless you have a dedicated IP address going to a single computer in your home, they don't really know quite where you are.
Okay.
And there isn't a whole lot you can do about it, because that's where your cell signal is hitting the internet.
Okay, yeah, I was just curious about it. It's really no big deal. I was just wondering why it was happening. Yeah. But
it is kind of nice that you're getting warned that you're logging in at somewhere unusual.
Right.
Yeah, that does happen. And I also tried it a few different ways. I was going to supermarket websites just to hit the location button, so it would tell me what supermarkets are in my location, and just to see if it would take me to where I really am or to Elk Ridge, Maryland. And yesterday I hit one that took me to Elk Ridge, Maryland, as soon as I hit the, find supermarkets in your area. But today it seemed to take me where I am in Pottstown. The page is telling me where supermarkets are in Pottstown. So mostly it works most of the time.
Mm-hmm. It may depend on which cell tower you're connected to. And if it's a supermarket you frequent, you may be switched to their Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Yeah. In addition, beg your pardon. Sorry. Choking to death right here.
Live on the air.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Scoop. You can, of course, see where your current location is on Google Maps. That's often different. If, for example, you go to Google Maps from your phone, it uses the GPS in your phone. So you get a much more accurate you are here than you might doing it from your home network. Anybody who just bases it on your IP address, which is inexpensive, and there are some free services that will indeed return you that address. There are some free services, but again, I'm sorry. But those are based on your IP address, which in fact resolves to the ISP, not to your house.
But Google thinks we're deeper in the building than we are.
Yeah, because that's where that's where the site is.
Yeah,
the router. So yeah, there's a IP. I think it's ipinfo.io.
Was that the group?
No, it's a website. Ipinfo.io is a website, and you can put in any IP address, and it will return to you the information about that place. You can even sign up for thousands of hits a month. That's how we do it on Soundbites. But for example, IPinfo.io thinks that I am in Fairport.
That's interesting.
Because this
BOCES
system is on the BOCES network, mm-hmm. which is registered in Fairport.
Fairport.
So it isn't me. It's the
network.
So that's the IP address. But Google has mapped the Wi-Fi access point to be this building.
Google does it very differently. And you can buy access information from Google too if you pay for it. Midas.
Yeah.
The fact is that unless you're paying a metric bucket load of cash, you're going to sometimes get an incorrect address. Did that over answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Just out of curiosity, while I was talking to you, you mentioned ipinfo.io. I just went there just to see what it would give me, and it returned my location as Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is not too far from Pottstown, so I guess that's pretty close.
And that's are you at home now?
Yes.
And so you're on your home network?
Yes, I am.
Well, then whoever your provider is registered where'd you say? Philadelphia?
Philadelphia.
They registered in Philadelphia, and that's the address that comes back for that. That's the location that comes back for that address.
Okay. Well, I think you answered my question. Thank you very much for the information.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
A lot of time when the two-factor authentications come up from like Google and Apple, it will also have a location on it. Someone near this town is trying to log into your account, and that can be tricky when the location doesn't say it's you and mm-hmm. I'm setting up a new phone right next to me.
Yeah,
but my location, and that's what happens in our office a lot. My location says Canandaigua.
Right.
Yep.
At ipinfo.io, they have an API, an application programming interface, that you can connect to you send them an IP address, mm-hmm. and they send you back all the location data. And so, like I said, we use that for Soundbites. I can get 50,000 requests a month for free. Trust me, I don't use 50,000 requests a month.
No?
Believe me. I do, like I said, maintain a list of where people have voted in the poll from, but I know that it is not necessarily accurate. So when something says Pavilion, New York, I don't. That's where the ISP connects, mm-hmm. but they could be anywhere in the vicinity.
Yeah.
Belleville, Ontario, Metairie, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, Louisiana, Sharon, Massachusetts, Las Lunas, New Mexico.
Well, wait until Oregon. The 5G kicks in.
Well, exactly. You're not going to know where anybody really
is. They're putting up, if people take the time, and I've been noticing this more and more. If you look around, there are so many cell towers that have popped up all over the city, these big metal, you know, towers with the, you know, for cell phones all over in all kind, all neighborhoods. And it's only going to get worse with 5G because 5G has to have that clear line of sight.
And many more towers.
Yeah, many more towers, or it can't do its job.
But a side effect is it will be able to track you better.
Right.
Because there's so many more towers.
Yeah. Right.
I would like to hear from Phil Dampier as to how long he's been waiting to use the headline, The Final Frontier.
Well, he's been talking about Frontier going bankrupt for several years now.
I know. So he's been sitting on
this headline's been waiting, yeah.
Sitting on that headline and waiting, gritting his teeth. Like I said, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, as Carl did, call us toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. We're talking right now about Frontier, but we'll take your question about
anything. One other thing we got to mention before we go to break.
Okay.
As if folks see Mr. Rob Linton.
Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen.
Today's his birthday.
Happy birthday, dear Rob.
I still say I think I got socks older than him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no kidding. It's his birthday.
Yeah.
That's.
I wish I was trying to find a happy birthday tune, but yeah.
Well, it's in public domain now, so that should be somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
All the services were scared about including it in their libraries because it wasn't public domain for so long.
Right.
So someone had usurped the copyright when they shouldn't have.
Yes, they did. Yes, is exactly what happened. But at any rate,
Back on maps, first of the year now, people are starting to get their Google notice about their Google timeline showing everywhere they ever went last year.
Right.
And half the people, go, oh, that's cool. It knows where I went. And then you go, oh, crap, it knows where I went.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's your phone. And it is much more accurate from your phone than it is from your home.
And what folks don't understand also is, you know, all right, so you might turn some of it off on, you know, as far as location at different apps and that. There's still so many other areas where you could be tracked just, you know, from cameras on buildings and everything else. The highway. You go along the expressways. They've got cameras all over that they could sit there and see, you know, when you went by this certain point. So there's really no hiding because they're doing it to see how traffic flows and everything else are going, but it's still a form of seeing if your vehicle went by a certain area and at what time, because it's all time stamped.
I have an acquaintance who is a conspiracy theorist.
Uh-huh.
And he's now working on, apparently there's a theory, and I don't know whether or not it's true, that if you wear something reflective, the facial recognition can't track you.
Seriously?
So he's getting glasses made with mirrors all around them. My point to him, of course, was how many people around here you think are wearing those glasses? One.
So now he's the only one.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Question for you. I recently switched the actual computer over to using Komodo's DNS service.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was reading, and it says something about that. You not even with the computer, but you should switch your router to do the same thing.
Right. Because
and
most...
If,
yeah, go ahead.
Is that really important? It is really important, isn't it?
Yeah, because really, the way it's supposed to work is your computer is supposed to query your router for DNS, domain name services, for everybody else. When you go to, say, google.com, the internet doesn't understand google.com.
Right.
It understands 8.8.4.2 or whatever the number is. And so it has to go to a domain name server for domain name services, DNS, and say, okay, I got this google.com thing. Where am I going? And it comes back and says, oh, you're going to 8.8.4.4. Okay. And that domain name service is the thing that translates from the stuff you remember to the stuff a computer remembers. A computer can understand. So
right.
That normally happens in your router.
Right.
And if you want every one of your devices to go to the same place, you can either change everyone by hand or just change your router.
Okay.
And then because if you don't change anything by hand, the router tells your computer to ask it, and it then asks other places. And the reason for that is that every router keeps a list of the places you go to most often, which means that you're saving wear and tear on the internet. When you ask the local router, your local router, I want to go to Google, it'll say, oh, I know that, it's here. And if it doesn't know it, then it has to say, hey, DNS server out in the world, where is such and so? And then it keeps track of that too. So in case you go back, it remembers it.
Okay. Now, I guess my main question is I'm having a hard time finding it in my router. Now, I'm using one of the UB routers from Spectrum.
I don't know.
You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't
change Spectrum's router, so you have to change. It has to be your own router that you change.
Okay.
Yeah, when you borrow a router from Frontier or Spectrum, you have no control over those, and you don't get to do most stuff in them.
Yeah, I notice it has a dynamic DNS
right
in it, but it is disabled.
Right.
So it's pulling DNS probably from its own Time Warner upstream servers.
Right.
Okay. So I can get around that by getting my own router.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I guess that answers that question.
And one of the changes that happened when Time Warner became Spectrum is Time Warner used to charge you rent for your cable modem and your wireless router. Spectrum only charges you rent on the wireless router. So you need to have the cable modem from them, but you can get your own wireless router, stop paying rent, and then you can control your DNS and all your other stuff in your own
port forwarding
router
and everything else.
Yep.
Yeah, they basically said if I wanted to, I could keep the same router I had, and they would go in and turn it off and disable it from me being able to turn it back on, the wireless portion.
Right.
And I don't think I'd do that. I don't want this big thing on my desk if I'm going to change it.
It'll probably be close to the same size.
You have two of them, yeah.
Well, my brother has a motor from them, and it's like half the size of this.
Yeah, the newer ones are smaller.
Well,
yeah.
And if you also have Spectrum phone service, you need a bigger modem yet, so it will have the telephone lines on it too.
When they installed mine, I told them I did not want an all-in-one router and phone, modem and phone modem and all that, and because I wanted to monitor my modem, and they wanted to put the modem way in the laundry room, which is on the other side of the house.
Where the cable comes in, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shorter run for them to do.
And they're not going to get a good wireless signal from there. So I told them no, and they put in a separate modem,
separate line?
Well, not a separate line, but a separate modem for the phone.
Okay. Yep.
And then they ran another line up to where my other modem is. So for the internet, and so I don't have to have one of those huge monstrosities to run my phone and my internet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
But, so I could just get one of their modems and then get my own router.
Yep. Yeah, and that'll do it for you.
Okay.
Dick got me hooked on the Orbi. And that Orbi, I mean, they're so easy to set up.
Yeah, the new mesh routers. Orbi, Eero has a set.
Yeah.
Google has a set.
About how much does the Orbi run?
What was it? About 150?
150, 170, something
like
that.
Yeah, right around there. Although, and that came with the router and a satellite.
If you want more control, you probably want to go for like a Linksys or Netgear. Well, Orbi is from Netgear. A standalone router that you can actually log into and do more changes with.
Okay. The Orbi does that.
Yeah.
Yeah. For example, one of the things I do is I email myself my logs from my router logs once a week so that I can, rather when they fill,
mm-hmm.
which sometimes is every day, so that I can check them. And I've got a little routine that automatically checks them for attempted break-ins.
Mm-hmm.
So I know who to block and what to do about that. But you couldn't do that, you know, with a router from Frontier,
yeah, because they're going to totally block that.
Right. You don't have that.
Yeah, you can't log in.
You don't have the rights to
router.
Yeah.
Well, eventually I'm going to be a green light subscriber, but my neighborhood's stuck at 66%. So,
yeah.
You're getting there.
A little while yet, but it's getting there.
Well, go knock door to door.
That's what I did, Mark. I got together with some of the other neighbors. If you've got, go around to get the door hangers and just go around and have them.
Well, that's how we got the 66%.
Yeah.
Something else.
Yeah.
That's a start. All right, Mark. I think we have people waiting. Yep. And we got to move on.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. It's an interesting little question as to how quickly they can get things done. And it has to do, as Steve said, it has a whole lot more to do with bureaucracy than it does with technology. And bureaucracy is always so much harder than technology. So, yeah, I get it. I do get it. Do we have a... No, I guess not. Dave's
pushing buttons to get him on the air.
We'll just keep talking. I don't know what he's on about. But it's apparently important. So we'll just keep chit-chatting away. Like I was saying, all right, let's go to the phone, and we'll talk to Bruce from Macedon, New York. Hi, Bruce. What's up?
Hi, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I just bought a new Windows 10 desktop, and it's still sitting in the box on the floor.
Okay.
I had a couple questions, you know, when I go to set it up. Number one, do I need to set up a password account?
You better.
I should. Okay.
Yeah, you absolutely should. Now, one of the things that Microsoft will want you to do is set up a Microsoft account. That's actually a good idea because it means that if there's ever an issue with your system, you can log back in using that account. Once you get the thing reset up again, and it's a better deal.
I just set up mine just 2 days ago, and it also asked me to, you know, put in an email address, and then it also wanted the PIN me to create a PIN number. So you can, when you go to log back in, you just put in, like I created a 4-digit PIN number to log into the machine a little bit faster than a long password.
But you start by making that long password, and then you generate a PIN from it.
Yep, exactly.
But don't skimp on that password.
Mm-mm.
Make it long, because like Dave just said, you're really only going to put it in a few times.
Yeah.
So make it a real long one.
Mine's 15 characters long.
I was going to say 24.
I did 15.
15 ain't bad.
No.
But at any rate, whatever you make it, make sure you write it down somewhere secure.
Right. Well, one of the books I'm looking at says you can set it up so you only have to use that when you shut down and restart the computer.
Mm-hmm. Well, what'll happen, though, is once you set that long one up, Windows will then ask you, all right, to get into your computer faster each time you log in, create a 4-digit pass number, a PIN number.
Okay. So that's where you would use the PIN.
Right. That's where you put in a PIN, and the PIN is tied to my password that I created for the Microsoft account. Because like Nick was saying, if I ever had to get back in, they'd want to know not my PIN number, they want to know my password.
And you can set Windows and the Mac. These things are both true for the Mac as well. It will ask for your password after your screensaver.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you get up and walk away from the computer, the screensaver kicks on. A lot of people don't like that.
Yeah, I hate it.
The problem is anyone else in your house can walk up to the computer and get into your stuff.
That's not an issue for me.
Except a lot of people will have service people come over. They'll have maintenance. If they live in a condo, a maintenance person might come in.
Friends drop by.
Landlords drop by. Typing that four-digit PIN isn't that onerous. To leave the screensaver password on just in case.
Yeah. We had a party one time and
We
had one of the kids come up to me at one point and say, "Mr. Francesco, what's your password?"
They wanted to play Minecraft.
No, that's why there's a password on that machine.
Yep.
It's not a game machine. It's a business machine.
Now, one of the first things you should do when you turn it on is install Revo Uninstaller, which will help you uninstall programs later.
Yeah, this is going to be one of my questions. Yeah.
That was the first thing I did, and then Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, and Avast Anti-Spyware.
Well, that was my second question. So are you recommending not to use the Windows Defender?
Yes, sir, because those companies update faster. As a matter of fact, it's not a bad idea to pay for those subscriptions. They're very nominal fees, but they will do it automatically and keep your machine clean and less chance of stuff sneaking in.
And then it will probably want to do updates.
And it'll do updates weekly.
And then you'll have your pot of coffee, because who knows how long it's been sitting in the warehouse before
you... Oh, you mean the Windows machine
Windows
itself.
Machine, Windows updates to get to you. And so it may take a while to run all the Windows updates.
Okay.
Yeah. So set aside some time.
And another thing, I'm looking in, like I said, I've got a book I'm looking at, and I don't see anything about a media player, Windows Media. Is that no longer part of the...
The application itself is gone because Windows does that automatically.
Yeah.
Much of that.
Well, I was surprised, too. It's like I needed my machine when I was first setting it up. I had to use this other program for creating fictitious COM ports. And it says, well, it doesn't have the driver. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I clicked on it. And it's one of the suggestions was, go find it. It went out to the internet and came back and said, all right, we fixed it for you. You're all set.
But that's only if you plug in weird stuff to need extra COM ports.
Much of that is normal.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff it finds.
So at any rate, the point here, Bruce, is that most of what you're reading is correct. Some of the stuff they just didn't go far enough. For example, telling you that Media Player isn't generally required as much anymore.
And I usually use a VLC, I think it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a great product. Good.
Use that 7-zip for unzipping files. Foxit for PDF files.
Unzipping is built in. A lot of people don't realize that unzipping is built into Mac and Windows. And
right.
So you go to some website. It's like Adobe Reader. You go to a website. It says you must download Adobe Reader. You must download 7-zip. No, that's built in. You don't have to download that.
Right. The other. I have the same problem on the Chromebook. Somebody said to me, "Well, there's no media player anymore." I said, well, have you tried clicking on a file?
Yeah, you want to play the media, you double-click it, and it plays.
Yeah.
It's in there.
It's built in.
It's
so
in
just
there.
Remember a couple of things. First thing you install is Revo Uninstaller. Second thing you install is your anti-spyware, antivirus, all of that stuff. And the third thing you do is click around, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You can always install more software later. But in terms of actually
running
the system, much of it is already built in.
One thing that I did put on after I did those four things was classic shell. I still like the old Windows menu type of system, not this panel stuff and all that. So I wound up getting, I've got it down, it saved off in like three different places. And I install that because it gives it the look of Windows 7.
Well, that's the default in Windows 10 now too. Is the panel view you have to go into specifically?
Right.
Yeah. No. That's why I use the classic.
They've gotten rid of all of that stuff. So set it up, see what you like and don't like.
Yep.
The big thing you have to remember is it doesn't have to be perfect day one. As long as you've got antivirus and anti-spyware and anti-malware running, as long as you've installed Revo One Installer, everything else can come along as you go.
And do you still use ATF for the junk files?
No.
Do I know what ATF is?
Yeah, I heard about it from your show several years ago, actually, and I've always run it. It's ATF Cleaner, I think it's called.
No, I don't remember.
We would talk about CC Cleaner. Well, just C Cleaner, but you see the two capital Cs.
No, this is ATF, but that's fine. So, but as a general junk files cleaner, used one in Revo.
No, like I say, temp files and all that are a thing of the past now with NTFS.
Well, there's a program you may might call Decrapify. It depends on where you got your machine and what brand it is. A lot of brands
I had it built.
Okay, then you're probably safe. A lot of the brands will install extra software because those companies paid them to do it. And so you buy a brand new machine and it's full of crap.
Right. ATF Cleaner is a program that seems good, seems free, not free. It is free, but it seems good and it seems clean. I have not used it in a very long time.
Yeah, same
but
here.
It's because I don't run Windows anymore. But it's certainly not a bad program and should be pretty good. I personally don't think it's better than CCleaner, but it's good.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll take your recommendation. I mean, that's where I got the ATF cleaner from, so.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. All right, I think that helps me out.
All right, let us know how you make out. Have fun with it.
Okay.
Thanks.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The big issue with setting up a brand new machine is that it's a daunting task. You know, what are you going to run? Are you going to run, do you need an Office suite? If so, do you need to pay for Microsoft Office? Could you use LibreOffice? Can you go with Google Docs up in the cloud? These are all decisions you have to make now. It's not as easy as it used to be. It's stuff you need to think about. The good thing is, as I said, nothing's written in stone. You can do any kind of changes you want at any time you want. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. Hi, Brian. What's up?
Gentlemen.
Hey, who came in?
Yeah, really? You got the wrong station.
I haven't been able to call in a
That's
while.
That's your link from Pavilion.
when you guys were talking about Frontier and their copper, I'm thinking that they're probably being crazy like a fox. I mean, pole space is a huge commodity, and I'm sure they own quite a bit of real estate when it comes to, hanging wire and stuff like that.
That's a good idea, yeah. So they don't care about the landline service. It's all the wires on all the poles that other companies will have to now rent from them.
That's a nice idea. Yeah.
I'm thinking that's probably, so you go bankrupt on the junk that doesn't work anymore, but you keep the value of the business. I mean, burying cable is a nightmare.
Yeah, it is.
And if it's up in the air, something goes wrong with it, you can just patch it up. And if you've got to dig holes.
In addition to pole space, there's also right of way.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm. That's the whole package. It's the whole that whole mess is actually probably got quite a bit of value.
Right, and so, that's one of the things that holds up somebody like Greenlight. Because they have to get permission to intrude on Frontier's or Spectrum's right of way,
or even Arjanine.
They got to get all of that.
And another big thing too is a lot of these right of ways and a lot of the stuff these people do. Did I lose you?
Sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
Oh, I'm sorry. We got bad phone service up here. I've missed my landline.
Yeah.
No, but a lot of the other, like a lot of the value is also they have all rules and regulations that date back to the turn of the century, which allows them to go pretty much Godzilla.
Right.
You know, so you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of value. Actually, I didn't call to talk about this today, though. I'm sorry about that. But,
that's okay.
I had the unfortunate circumstance of losing a very, very close friend a couple weeks ago.
I'm sorry.
Oh, me too. And it's never going to get better. I'm never going to be good with it. But I do have a part of our bond together as friends for life was our hideous text messages back and forth. Just bad comedy. and I would really, really like to be able to save these off my phone and irritate people at the funeral with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I tried a couple solutions online, but I can't find anything that wants to save them like in real text that I can use. Is there a way to do that on Android?
Who's your provider? Phone provider?
Horizon. Verizon.
Yeah. Well, are you an Android or an Apple person?
I'm an Android guy.
Okay. There are a couple of programs that will save off your text messages.
And allow me to print them?
Yeah, they'll save them to a file. You can do anything you want with them.
Great.
Yeah, we're looking through the Google Play Store. Fortunately, most of the stuff on Android is free, so you try them until you find one you like.
Well, the ones I found are saving it out in XML, and so I've got a lot of cruft.
Right. One of the things you can try kind of automatically is under advanced settings in the Android phone.
Yes.
Under backup settings, you can choose to back up your SMS, which are standard text messages, MMS, which are
multimedia messages.
Multimedia messages, pictures and all that stuff, and a couple of other things. And that should back them up automatically to Gmail, and then you can do whatever you want with them. Stay on the line. We have to take a slightly longer break, but stay on the line and we'll come back to you. Can you do that?
Sure can.
All right, we're going to take a longer break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with Brian from Pavilion, New York, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported. Jazz 90.1. We do have another hour of this nonsense coming up, so don't go away. We'll be back.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Brian from Pavilion, New York, on the line, who wants to know how to back up his SMS messages. You still there, Brian?
Yeah, I am, sir.
Yeah, you're there. Okay. Yes, we have an answer. Steve is, I think, actually already posted an article with three choices.
I think it was three, yeah.
Three different things you can use. I personally have used, as I said, the built-in thing under advanced settings, but you can also use programs like SMS Backup Plus. And a couple of others.
SMS Backup and Restore is the one that Android Central talks about.
Right. And there's you can use Tasker. You can use all there are a lot of things like that. But so there are plenty of them, and all of them will do something very, very similar. So my suggestion is that you take a look at the list that Steve posted, read through what each of them does, and pick the one that makes you happy.
Okay, that's cool. I was kind of trying to maintain the original format and, you know, stuff like that. But if, you know, that's
well, again, look through it and see what they do. Some of them send them as a series of email messages. Some of them group them all together into a sort of a document.
Yeah, I use one on the Mac that does reads from iPhone, and it makes each conversation a PDF. So that you maintain the text, the graphics, the emojis that they put in.
Right.
So a lot of that's part of that in pictures of, you know, like bragging about, you know, which expensive beer we're drinking and stuff like that. So.
Right. so you can SMS Backup Plus, SMS Backup and Restore Pro. You can also just go into the Google Store, the Android Store, and type in SMS backup.
And that will search for and find them.
That'll search for them.
Well, that's great. Well, Liz, I appreciate it, guys, very much. And, you know, rock on. And we'll talk to you down the road.
Yes, you will. Thanks.
We'll see you.
Bye-bye. But, yeah, you know, a lot of people don't care. I mean, 90% of my text messages are a reminder for my dentist or, you know, spam. But I want to save the messages for my daughter, for my wife, from friends, particularly deceased friends. I completely get that.
And a lot of people will send pictures back and forth, and you may not realize how much storage space that's using on your device. And so we see all the time people come in and it says my storage is full. And it's pictures in text messages. You can end up with several gigs worth of text message pictures.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Bob?
Oh, good afternoon.
It is.
Regarding the discussion about setting DNS in routers earlier, I've yet to meet a router or modem with firmware that you can't set that in. I know Frontier's current modems do. I can't speak for Time Warner's or Spectrum's because I've always used their bridge modem because my head-end machine is a Linux box and I run my own DNS server on that.
Right. You don't have the admin credential, so you can't log into the router to make the changes.
Right. When we talk about setting that stuff up in your router, that's a router that you purchase or build yourself.
But with the Frontier and the Spectrum.
Frontier's modems. It's in there. Customers can get at it. They're not going to help you, but it's there.
Right, but you have to get the administrative credentials to log in and do that with.
And the default password on those things is admin.
Yeah, well, probably that, is, yeah.
Probably stupid. It isn't on Spectrum, because I've tried. I have Spectrum.
As I said, my head-end machine is a Linux box, and I run my own DNS server.
Right.
Yeah, so we should clarify that all routers can set the DNS, but you need to be administrator and be able to log in to your router to make that change.
And if you have the password, then you can, and if you do not, you cannot.
Mm-hmm. That's fairly true, but I think we can get into most of them somehow.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe, but you know, I won't argue that, but the fact is you're coming from an entirely different skill set than most of the people.
And we do not get into doing that type of stuff because if you mess up, if we sit there and say, oh, yeah, do this, this, and this, and something gets messed up, we're not going to take the responsibility. It's just like for years, we have never told folks how to go into the Windows registry and play around with that. Yes, you can change a lot of things in there, but we don't want to be responsible for that.
It's like that we need to put a terms of service for the radio that agree that if you try anything we suggest, you
it's
won't.
It's on you.
It's on you, and you won't
we
blame
We take
us.
No responsibility.
And you won't blame us.
And in terms of the Frontier and Spectrum modems, I have not read their terms of service because I have neither. So I don't know if it's legal to do that, and we certainly won't tell anybody how to do something that is illegal.
All right, that'll be another quarter for the swear jar.
There you go. All right,
I'm
thanks,
not
Bob.
About that.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Bob.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye bye. Yeah, Bob is correct. Every modem, every router certainly has the ability to set and mess around with DNS
settings. It's just whether you have the authority to go in and do
it. Right, right. It's your authority rather than the ability of the router to do it.
Yeah,
and it's not just can you, but may you.
Yeah.
And that's just the fact of life, you know.
And we don't want, like I said before, we don't want to be responsible if something gets messed up. Well, you guys at Soundbites told me I could do this. No, won't take on that task.
Whatever happens between two consenting adult computers is their business, but we're not going to.
We will not have any influence on it.
And just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Should, yeah.
Right. So if you're a Microsoft user, maybe you should pay attention to this particular little gem. Microsoft has admitted that between December 5th and 31st of 2019, approximately 1 month ago, a misconfiguration, they said, of the security rules for an internal customer support database left it exposed for anyone to access, no password required. The database of nearly 250 million customer service and support records was accessible to anyone capable of running a web browser. The data, which covered a time period of 14 years from 2005 to December of 2019, were found on five servers, each of which contained an identical copy of the 250 million records. According to a blog post by Microsoft, the vast majority of records had been automatically redacted to remove some personal information. However, many records were found to contain the following sensitive information: customer email addresses, IP addresses, locations, descriptions of CSS claims and cases. Microsoft, that's customer support services. Microsoft support agent emails, case numbers, resolutions, remarks, and internal notes marked as confidential. Such information could clearly be useful to a scammer posing as a genuine Microsoft support technician. Microsoft said, "We want to sincerely apologize and reassure our customers that we are taking it seriously and working diligently to learn and take action to prevent any future occurrence." Microsoft said its investigation into the security breach has found no malicious use of the data, but that it has begun to notify customers whose data were present in the unsecured database. So what does this mean to you? First and foremost, and most importantly, your personal information is probably safe, at least for now, even though the database contained information on 250 million people. Very little of it was actually usable, the only notable exceptions being email and IP addresses. Those exposed email and IP addresses could be used to send phishing attacks from accounts posing as official Microsoft support. You could get an email that said, "Hello, Mr. and Mrs. blah, 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 regarding your case number, our resolution was blah, but we have more information. Please call us at..." And, of course, it's your email address, it's your name, it's your case number, it's your resolution. So, of course, you think, "Well, I'll just call." Those exposed email and IP addresses could be used to send phishing attacks. Keep an eye out for random Microsoft support emails if you've used the service in the past. And be smart about not clicking on random links. Remember, Microsoft will never, ever make contact with you cold and ask you to call them or click on a link. They just don't care that much.
They're too busy doing other stuff.
They're not going to pay enough people to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten a cold call from Microsoft, quote, support, unquote? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Larry did from Penfield, New York. Hiya, Larry. What's up?
Well, I have a 13-inch Chromebook.
Good for you.
And I thought it'd be neat to have a second monitor for that, since it's a fairly small screen, and I've usually got way too many tabs open at one time and work back and forth between them. So I bought myself a 32-inch Hisense TV and connected it up. I thought, I'm all set now. And it works after tearing out a lot of hair, but which I don't have much of. But when I cast my tab to the screen, it takes over the entire screen so that I can only see one thing at a time on the second screen as opposed to multiples like I was used to before using Windows. Am I stuck with that, or is there a way around that?
Well, that's how casting works. Are you plugging in the HDMI cable from the monitor to the computer?
Yes.
Then it should show up as a second screen and let you put whatever windows you want over there.
So let me back up a little bit. When you go into Manage Displays, you have two choices, Mirrored and Extended Desktop, and you've selected Extended Desktop.
Correct.
Under Resolution, you've got the correct resolution for the screen.
Well, I don't know. It had a default in there, and that's where it is. So.
Yeah, it's probably fine. All right, when it gets over there and it fills the screen, have you tried using the little icons in the upper right corner, the underscore, the little boxes, and the X, and see if that changes the size?
Yeah, maybe the window is just set to full screen, and you can unfull screen it?
Unfull screen it, yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
There's got to be a better word for it.
From what? Where would I do that?
Well, you know how you can, on a regular computer, in the upper right corner of any window, you have the minimize, maximize, and close buttons?
Yes.
Those exist in Chromebooks, too. The minimize is a little dash.
Right.
The maximize is a little box, and the close is an X.
So just like Windows.
Just like Windows. So if you click on that box, it should change the size of the window.
It usually changes it to like a double window, doesn't it?
Well, it'll switch between maximized and individual windows.
Right. The other thing you can do is anywhere across the title bar at the top, you can double-click on that, and it will do the same thing. It will change it from maximum to regular, from regular back to maximum.
Can he also just go up into, say, the right-hand corner, right-click on that corner, it usually turns it to a double-headed arrow, and pull it down to resize it?
If it's not full screen.
Right.
Oh, it's not full screen on my Chromebook.
Right, but on the external monitor it is.
I'm doing that as we talk.
Yeah.
Well, by golly.
By golly, there you go.
It's trying to be helpful and making it full screen.
Right.
Which is not helpful at all in your case.
Right.
This is interesting, though. I can do that with the height, but it doesn't seem to work with the width. So
well, once it's smaller one way, then you can do what Dave said, which is point to one of the edges, and the cursor will turn into an arrow pointing left and right. Click and hold the button.
And you can resize it.
And you can resize it.
Well, when I do that, though, what it does is it moves it on my Chromebook. It moves it like you would expect it to. But it doesn't change the width on the second screen. It actually changes the height.
And you're on an edge, not the left or right edge, not the top or bottom.
Oh, do you have to be on the top?
Well, no, on the top would make it large, taller or shorter.
Yeah,
on the left or right edge, it would make it narrower or wider.
Well, it does on my laptop, but not on the second screen. It's still full width.
Yes, and when you move the cursor over to that left edge, does it turn into... Okay, the other thing you can try is once you've made it smaller, can you click and hold on the bar with the title in it, the title bar, and move it left and right or up and down
Move it around on the screen.
Yeah, just move it around on the screen until you can see an edge. Then when you grab that edge, the cursor turns into a left and right pointing arrow. Click and hold the button and slide it smaller so that the screen is not as wide.
Hmm. Well, I can move it around on my laptop again, but it's not moving anywhere on the second screen.
Well, have you gone over to the second screen, go up to that corner where the dash, the box, and the X is, click on the box, see if it changes it to a double box, and then go up in that corner, way up in the corner, or even on an edge, and if you're on the top, pull it down. If you go over to the side, pull it in towards the center of the screen. We know you can do it on your laptop, but we're trying to work with you as far as doing it on the TV.
Right. When I get over to the edge of the TV, I just lose the cursor. I can't...
I think it's in the sizing.
I think you're still in full screen mode.
Yeah, I think...
Also, for the resolution, you may need to check the manual of the monitor to see what the best resolution for it is, and you may have to change that in the Chromebook settings. So instead of default, it may supposed to say best,
or
it's the specific 1920 by 1080 that it is.
Or go back into it and make it something a little bit smaller. You know, if you go into the screen and it's going for the max, go to the next one down and see if that helps as far as moving it around and resizing it. Because it might be thinking that it can do it, and you might be just on the outsides of the bellows, on the edge of the windows. And if you go a little bit smaller, it might bring it in a little bit more, and then you can play around with the sizing. Give it a shot.
Well, I tried going to higher numbers. It didn't work. Let's go to a lower number.
Perfect. Yeah, go to lower numbers.
All right, let us know how that works out. We do have to kind of move on.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Larry. We're happy to help, but we can't sit
on
the
phone
while you try.
Is that covered in your Chromebook book?
It is. That is not, because that's a...
Second edition.
Second edition is coming up. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it would be a good one.
That's exactly right.
Of course, that means you got to go out and get now a 32-inch TV to hook it up to a Chromebook.
Well, I swear, it's me, doesn't it?
I swear, honey, it's for my work.
It's research, so I can publish my next book.
It's research.
Yep.
We
actually, our big TV finally died. The backlights have been getting a little weaker, and so it's getting dimmer and dimmer. Well, the other day they were overly bright, and my wife is going, "Wow, the TV's working again." And I'm thinking, no, it's ready to really die now. And then, so of course, the next day it won't light up at all. So I go grab another TV. So we went from a 55-inch to a 32-inch.
Ooh.
Grab another TV we had pushed off in another room and set it just in front of the big TV. and set it all up and working. It took her a couple of days to notice. But what's weird is when I'm watching the TV now, it looks like there's giant black bezels around it. Because I can see the old TV behind it. So we're going to wait for a recycling day to get rid of the old TV, and
right.
So now I'm looking at a 65-inch.
Well, I got a 55 if you want to.
Yeah?
Yeah, I got.
When my father-in-law passed, we inherited his 70-inch TV.
Well, I got a 55 because that's too big for up in our bedroom.
Yeah.
And I wound up getting a nice 32-inch, and I got it on a stand.
Sure.
So I can have it right at the end of the bed.
I can swing by after the show. Although my wife has been saying that the 55 in the living room does seem a little small now. When we got it like 4 or 5 years ago, it was huge.
Huge, yeah. I'm used to my TV's a 24-incher, I think it is.
Yeah. You just sit two feet from it.
It sits right. It sits next to the computer monitor. The computer monitor is bigger than the television, but I don't watch much TV anymore.
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
It mainly gets pushed out of the way so the cat has somewhere to lay down. Well, and if I don't push it out of the way, she will. And she'll knock it off the table. So, yeah. I don't watch a lot of television anymore.
Me neither. I'm just so busy with other projects and everything else.
I came downstairs for supper. My wife was watching Elementary on Hulu. And I got hooked. I watched the entire episode. The entire episode!
Whoa.
Well, yep. It was one of the ones with French Stewart, and he's actually kind of a pretty doggone good actor, and so I got caught by it. But it was... That was something else. That was the other day she was watching NCIS, and I actually watched that, too.
Oh, yeah. My wife, yeah, with... I don't know whether they're bringing back Ziva.
Temporarily.
She came back for some episodes, yeah.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah. You know, they keep mentioning her more and more. And
they brought her back for a few episodes, and maybe she'll be back for another one.
Well, the funny thing was that Tony couldn't be in the show because...
his contract with...
No, what's his name? The actor. He's got his
Michael
own show.
Weatherly.
Michael Weatherly. He's got his own show on another network now.
Yeah.
He's on another network. Bull,
yeah. So yeah. He couldn't even make a cameo.
Right.
Although I have seen some of the networks are getting a little more lax about allowing you to do cameos on other networks.
Right.
It used to be if it was another show on the same network.
Oh, they swap
that was okay.
Over all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, but now
yeah.
Different networks. In fact, I'm going through Crisis now. I got through the first 3 hours of Crisis, and I have to watch the last two. I had to do the Kevin Smith Crisis Aftermath.
Oh, sure.
And then the next two episodes of Crisis. Now,
I couldn't.
It kind of makes me want to go back and read the comics, but I know I would be disappointed because it's different. I never got into the comics that much when I was a kid. And they were talking about how great all the comics were and how, you know, they recognize the costume that Brendan Routh wore was from this comic version. And
right.
Everyone was excited about it.
Well, right.
It looked like a Superman costume to me.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't watch any of the CW shows. They're all just teen angst romances. And it just annoys the heck out of me.
And they're adding Stargirl.
Yeah, they're adding Stargirl, which should be a preteen angst thing. All right. That music tells me that we have to take another quick break. But don't go away. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Tom from Brighton, New York on the line. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, I got a recent update to Avast, the antivirus suite, and one of the features it has now apparently is it can do a scan on your files before Windows installs.
Yep.
And you know, I did one of those a couple of days ago. It took quite a long time for it to go through its full suite of protections. Is that something that should be done like every time or just on a sometimes basis?
Well, my suggestion is that any time you install a program from somewhere that isn't Microsoft, well, I shouldn't say that because stuff gets into the stores that should be checked in. You should do it every time.
At least scan the installer before the install.
Right. And I realize it takes a lot of time, but how much time would it take you to clean your machine?
Sure, yeah. So like on a daily basis, weekly basis?
Mm. Well, that's separate from scanning something before it installs.
Okay.
So what you're now talking about is the scans, a scan of your entire hard drive.
Right. As opposed to, so when you're installing something, you should do that pre-scan before Windows installs. But when you're visiting websites and various things on the internet, that that would just be after you just do a scan after Windows installs the way I normally do.
Well, hold on. Really, two different things. When you're talking about installing new programs, which I think is what you're talking about, scanning that file that's installing is a good idea. But if you're talking about scanning your system daily or weekly or monthly, that's not just for stuff you've installed. It's also for files and for everything else. So, yes, we recommend that people scan their systems every day.
But this feature where it scans before Windows installs.
That only happens when Windows is installing, and you never have to think about it other times.
When Windows is installing.
Installing a Windows update or an application.
Right.
Okay, or an application, yes. All right, so those two, Windows or an application. But a simple scan, a daily scan of your system for just checking up on internet sites and things like that, that can be done using the conventional suite of
right.
scans that it does, yeah.
Right, and that if you've most systems you have to pay for that ability, but if you have paid for it, you can automate it, and that means that you never have to think about it again. On my machine, because I leave it on 24/7, I have it kick off at like 1 a.m. I have to change that because I'm still up at 1 a.m. these days.
Yeah,
but
that's what I do too. Yes.
Yeah, and so. Just let that run, and that will help keep your machine as clean as possible.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I was saying, say make sure you run the latest updates to both Avast and AVG. They both got caught. Actually, one of them bought the other one, but they're still selling both products. It was found that their web scanner that scans websites to make sure they're safe before you go there, was collecting a lot more data than necessary for scanning a website. And they have since reduced the amount of data it's scanning and changed their privacy policy to tell you what they're doing.
So always make sure you're running the latest.
Yeah, so they do have to look at the URL and compare that with a list of known scammers, but they don't need to copy any more information about your computer or
right.
you.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Bergen, New York. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Hey, guys. I just had a question. I wondered if you had any recommendations for alternate social media sites besides Facebook.
MeWe?
Yeah, okay. I just looked into that. And Diaspora was another one because I'd heard of it, and it's been around, I guess, since like 2010.
I think that's huge in Brazil.
Yeah.
MeWe looks like it's really geared toward young, you know, early 20s people. But
I'm on it, and I'm none of those things.
Yeah. Any other ones that you can think of? I know there's so many.
Mastodon, I've heard, is good.
Right. Discord. Did we just say Discord? Did he say Discord?
Oh, no. Discord. Just Diaspora.
You said Diaspora.
Diaspora is kind of a general purpose social media. Discord is often used on specific topics, and websites will run a Discord for their comments about the things they post.
Right.
Yeah.
Mastodon is another social networking site that has been. They've said they have 2 million users. Not compared to the 2 billion Facebook has, but.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because just a couple hours ago, I went on Facebook, and it was having trouble. It wouldn't load.
They had a blackout yesterday.
She had the same problem. And I went online, and it looked like it was having problems all over the place with Facebook. But now it's fine. I just logged in again. But it just made me think, you know, I'm really. I don't like Facebook, and I want to try something else.
Believe me, I get that.
Find something that other people I know would also go to.
That's the problem, is you have to go to where your friends are, so you have to get all your friends to switch.
Yeah, that's the only reason I'm on Facebook still.
Right. I'm trying to look back. Some point yesterday, I found a new one.
Yeah.
But, of course... Finding it again.
See, that's the problem with the internet. You find so much cool stuff that you can never find again. And you try to bookmark everything, then you have too many bookmarks to look through.
Well, that's why I always throw where I do that type of stuff, I always save it into a temp one. And then, you know, from there you can move it into something, another category if you really want to keep it. But like you say, too often you want to just be able to quick get back to it, so I throw it in a temp one. And then if I'm really going to use it more and more, I'll move it off into another one.
Right, yeah. And of course, I say I saw it yesterday. I may have seen it Thursday or Wednesday or...
Yeah, days all blur together when you don't have to go to work every day.
That's exactly right.
And you stay up past 1 o'clock in the morning.
Past 2. I was in bed before 3 this morning, so that was good. But yeah, there are a number of additional ones that are out there.
I just pasted an article from Fast Company on several of them that we've mentioned.
Yeah.
I've been toward diaspora because that one has been around a long time, and I imagine it's got a lot of followers.
MeWe is one that I've recently started playing around with. There's also WT dot something from the Wikipedia, but I haven't played much with that. But yeah, the problem with any of those types of sites is they have to have a critical mass.
Yeah.
And until they do, you're kind of lost.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for the recommendation.
Yep, good luck.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, I've been...
Part of the problem is that the big companies tend to buy up the little companies before they can become popular.
Right. And unless you have deep pockets... How do you get people suddenly coming to your... I mean, think about, you're going to start... I don't care what kind it is. It's a social media site. It's a dating site. It's whatever. How do you get people to come to that site?
Yeah.
You spend money on advertising. That's how you do it. And so it requires deep pockets all over the place to do that stuff. All right, our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jim?
Okay, so I have a laptop. It's a Lenovo IdeaPad 300. I was having problems connecting to the Wi-Fi system, so I called Lenovo. They said, just clear everything out and start fresh. You know how you do that yet?
Yeah.
So I did that. When I go in, everything's working, but when I log on to Windows, it's a Windows. It uses Windows 10. Why is it that the display, when you get that Windows that pops up after you've logged on, is different than what it was before?
You mean the screen where you put in your password?
No, after that. After you put in your password and it gives you like the, what do you call it? You know, like
desktop?
You click on the start button and you got that.
Yeah.
It lists all the different most used and all the different little... software stuff that's in there, like your if you have Acrobat or CD Burner or any of these photos, Groove Music, all that stuff, this whole big display is all different.
You mean the background is different?
Yeah, all that.
Yeah, but all the icons that you have on your desktop, those are still the same, yeah?
No, it all went away. I mean, reload Firefox.
It sounds like you loaded the tile interface instead of going to the desktop.
I'm not sure what that means.
That was it's an interface designed for touch screens. Is everything a big tile that you would click on to launch a program?
No, it's you have to use a mouse. I use a mouse. It does have a touchpad, but I use a mouse.
Right. Yeah, but the tile interface was designed for touch screens, and you can accidentally go into it on your desktop.
Looks like a bunch of squares, like tic-tac-toe.
That place. But it's all different. Even the type, it just seems like it's been extremely simplified from what it used to be.
Could he have the views? You know how you can do different desktop views?
Yeah.
I don't think he's in desktop view. I think he's in tile view.
I think he's in tile view
as well.
Yeah,
but he's picked one of them that...
Like it's when you hit the start button and that big, huge square pops up.
All the tiles, yeah.
Yeah. And why would it have changed? And it seems that all of the programs like Microsoft and all of Windows and all that it seems to have eliminated like a humongous amount of them.
Well, they move around.
Well, hang on. When Lenovo told you to reset everything, did it erase the computer and reinstall everything from scratch?
Yes.
Oh, that's why. That's why.
So what happens is when you bring up, so your desktop looks okay, but when you hit the start button, all those squares are different.
Yes.
Okay. So what's happened is Lenovo has reset your entire system. So what you need to do now is set it up the way you want. And the way you do that is that you can click and hold the mouse button on a tile and drag it somewhere else in that screen.
Yeah.
So you can then set it up the way you want. But the reason it's different is because when Lenovo told you to reinstall everything, it wiped out all your original settings and put it back the way Microsoft has it for themselves right now.
Yes.
So you can change all of that, but you have to do it by hand.
Right. And I'm doing that. I've got a desktop as well, and I'm seeing what you're talking about. I am moving things around.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Now,
you can turn off those live tiles. It looks like you right-click on it and turn off live tile.
Okay, I see that.
To get rid of those tiles, yeah. So the tiles are most useful on a touch screen, and they came out in Windows 8, and that's why everyone hated Windows 8, because no one had touch screens.
Right. I'll have to fool around with it, maybe even call Lenovo back. I mean, they gave me a case number. I was talking with somebody.
Good.
Yeah. So you can turn all those things off and go back to your regular desktop.
Or if you don't care for that and you like the old Windows look and feel, like, say, Windows 7, there's a program called Classic Shell. And I go back to that because I don't care for all those stupid tiles and everything else. I like the old-fashioned Windows 7 look with the, you know, the menu bar and all that. And it's a program called Classic Shell. You install that. Even though it's Windows 10, it makes it look like Windows 7.
Okay, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, you can read up about the program.
Yep. Now, let me one other thing. Why, you know, like all of a sudden, what I did was I cleared out cookies to try and go onto a website that was having problems loading. They said, oh, go in and clear out cookies. I did that, and it wiped out some of the temp files. All of a sudden, I started having a royal problem. It wouldn't connect Wi-Fi. What do you think happened there?
Probably unrelated.
Well, it depends on how you cleared your cookies. I mean, if you cleared all your settings, then yes, you would start having all kinds of problems.
Right.
If you cleared,
inadvertently, I went somewhere, clicked on a box, and it just wiped everything out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like your machine is new again. And now, and of course, that would happen after Lenovo reset everything anyway.
Yeah.
So you have to reestablish connections to all the things that had been normal before.
Right. Which is a lot of work, but I guess that's what I got to do.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, that's what ticks me off, though, sometimes about tech support.
Yeah.
They're just reading out of a cookbook.
Exactly.
And they're trying to get through as many calls.
And they have to get
taking time to read.
They have to get you off the phone as soon as possible because they're scored by how long their calls are, and long calls are bad.
Right. And the easiest way to solve any problem is just reinstall Windows.
Yeah, erase everything and reinstall, and then you hang up, and if you have another problem, you call back, and it's somebody else's problem to help you again.
But that's generally what happens. We don't normally suggest reinstalling Windows unless it's a massive problem. But when you do, you really need to reset all of your, you know, you need to reinstall all your programs. You need to reset all your passwords because, you know, you try to log in and it doesn't remember any of them.
Right.
So you have to do all of that, and that is directly related to reinstalling the operating system.
Right. All right, I got a lot of work ahead of me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You didn't have any other plans this weekend, did you?
Yeah, right.
Good luck, my friend.
Right, thank you.
Yep.
Oh, well,
and
it
especially,
is what it is.
Yeah, especially if you, say, upgraded from your old machine, it would have copied all your old settings over. Now it's got the default settings of a brand new machine.
Right. And that's what, like I said, going back to the tech support, I hate that because one time I was over at a client and they were having trouble with their QuickBooks. So we got QuickBooks on the phone because they were upgrading. And QuickBooks resolution, and again, we're talking to overseas, well, then you're going to have to reformat your whole machine and start fresh. I go, no, wait a minute. Let's back up here for a minute.
Hold on for a QuickBooks problem? No.
You want me to reformat this whole machine just because your program isn't working right? All the other programs in that work fine. How do you figure that?
And they not?
No, it went silent. He goes, yeah. Well, maybe we better refer you to somebody else. I said, I think you better. Yeah. And then he hung up.
They never ask you if you have a backup. They never warn you that you're going to lose all your data. And so we've had people come into the store, and Apple on the phone told them to reformat their computer. And where'd all my stuff go? Well, it's gone. You reformatted your computer. Well, they never told me it was going to do that.
Yeah.
We had a poor guy this week. He bought a new computer and wanted to do all the migration himself.
Uh-oh.
4 days later, both his computers come in. They've both been erased.
Yeah.
Because Apple told him to erase and restore from his backup hard drive. Okay. Why did you tell him to erase the computers?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that has...
Because that got him off the phone.
Because it gets them off the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all
That's
about
why
turnover.
We always suggest take your computer to a local dealer where you have a face to look at. And they're actually invested now in solving your problem rather than just getting you out the door.
Yep.
And it turned out one of his problems was that the hard drive on his old computer was dying. And that's why he was having trouble migrating. But you don't erase the computer to test that.
Yeah.
You run a test.
Right. and erasing it doesn't necessarily... It might. If it's a bunch of bad sectors, yes, it will then block out. They'll say, I get that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really help your machine.
Yeah. Doesn't help.
Right. Particularly if the person doesn't have a known good backup. How do you know your backup is good? You go restore something.
Well, the other thing
restore
is, though,
restore a random file every once in a while.
That these people don't ask. All right, before having them, you know, wipe out the machine, do you have all your stuff backed up?
Well, the problem with that is people are going to say yes.
They either don't know what it means or they backed up a year ago and think that's okay.
Yeah.
Right. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. Again, next week, call in earlier and more often. We can't take calls at the end of the show. Again, happy Lunar New Year. All of you rats out there, congratulations. We'll be back next week. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Mark Murphy from Greenlight, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to the longest running computer show in the entire whole known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You as we have remained member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other, will you?